Welcome to the KMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. On this episode, we have in-depth coverage on this week's Southern Humboldt Multi-Agency Wildland Readiness Drill, updates on the bentonite spill in Redwood Creek, and Eureka's five-year infrastructure plan. But up next, a quick rundown of local headlines. This is KMUD News. In Humboldt News, here are up-to-date county election totals from last week's California primary election, courtesy of the Humboldt Elections Department's first post-election night report. In the governor's race, Tom Steyer leads Humboldt County with over 27% of votes so far, corresponding to 5,214 ballots. Steve Hilton is currently in second place with over 25% of the vote, corresponding to 4,885 ballots. While Steyer is thus far Humboldt's top vote-getter for governor, it is very likely that this November's general election will pit Javier Becerra against Steve Hilton due to statewide totals. The top vote-getter thus far in Humboldt County for lieutenant governor is Fiona Ma, with just under 25% of the vote. Fiona Ma is also already confirmed to move on to the November general election. In local races, the state senator for District 2 race has been a trouncing, with Democrat Damon Connolly receiving nearly 60% of votes so far in Humboldt County. It is likely Damon will face Republican Tief Gibbs in this November's general election. Democrat Jared Huffman also dominated in his race as the incumbent U.S. Congressman for the 2nd U.S. District. Huffman has received over 54% of Humboldt County votes thus far, but it's unclear who his challenger will be in November. For County Supervisor for District 5, Mary Burke continued her dominance from election night, with over 73% of the votes thus far. It is likely Burke will be the next Humboldt County Supervisor. In Shelter Cove, it appears that the Measure A tax initiative for the Shelter Cove Resort Improvement District will pass easily. Currently, the yes vote for Measure A is leading 104 votes to 34. Finally, in Trinidad, the Measure B Trinidad Unified School District bond measure, yes votes are leading, 189 votes versus 134 who voted no on the measure thus far. In state news with potential local school district implications, the United States Justice Department sent out a press release today, June 8th, detailing their investigation of multiple California school districts, including the San Francisco Unified School District. The investigation focuses on, quote, instruction on sexual orientation and gender ideology in grades pre-K through 12. The Justice Department also stated, quote, the Supreme Court's recent decisions in Mahmoud and Mirabelli have put all school districts on notice. Policies that keep parents in the dark about sexuality and gender ideology in the classroom must end now, end quote. The Justice Department's reductive investigation stems from ideology that helped elect President Trump into office, an electoral strategy that used public fears about transgender youth and adults for political gains. It is unclear what risks a fear-mongering investigation into California schools poses for transgender and queer students, but it was almost certainly initiated to distract from the Iran war, the Epstein files, and other unpopular issues for the Trump administration. In Eureka, there was a two-vehicle crash on Highway 101 north of Trinidad today, June 8th. The crash occurred around 8:25 a.m. and involved a black Toyota 4Runner and a Ford F-350 truck. The Ford flipped onto its roof during the crash. Traffic was backed up in the area, and CHP requested additional traffic control. An ambulance was requested, but the extent of injuries to those involved is still unknown. And now to our main stories. This is KMUD News. We begin our main stories with an update from California Water Boards on the bentonite spill into Redwood Creek. KMUD News reports. On Friday, June 5th, KMUD News broke a story concerning bentonite contamination from a spill in Redwood Creek that made its way to the South Fork of the Eel River. Today, Monday, June 8th, we spoke with Adona White, Water Resources Control Engineer for the North Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board, to learn more about what the Water Board knows so far. Adona provided updates, including a theory on the specific source of the bentonite spill. We started with Adona's confirmation of the substance in the creek likely being bentonite and possible risks posed by bentonite.
Well, we're pretty certain it's bentonite, based on what we've learned about the source of the material and the activities generating it. And in terms of concerns about bentonite, if it's dry, there's an inhalation risk. It can cause, human health impacts if inhaled, but that's only if it's dry. If it's in the water, the concerns we have to do with the fine particles entering the water column and making it turbid or cloudy, and that can impact organisms and their ability to feed. That can also, when it settles out, it can smother the channel bottom and the gravels, as well as any organisms that are there, including, say, amphibian eggs or macroinvertebrates. Also, there could be some settling out in water tanks if water was diverted into tanks while it was cloudy.
And then the other thing I was interested in asking you about is just confirming the source of the potential contamination. So I believe in an email, your coworker, Kaysen, had said that it was due to fiber optic work along Highway 101. Is that still the current theory, or are you looking at some other sources as well?
So the investigation's ongoing. We believe at this time that the source of the bentonite that's been discharged to Redwood Creek is associated with a fiber optic cable drilling effort along Highway 101. We are coordinating with other agencies trying to ensure that the activities don't lead to further discharges, but we have a lot of unanswered questions at this time, so we're continuing our information gathering efforts.
Currently, it is believed the bentonite came from a drilling project for fiber optic cables along Highway 101. And based on reports, KMUD News believes it is likely Supergel X, which is a freshwater drilling fluid produced from sodium bentonite from the state of Wyoming. KMUD News is actively investigating this story and will be filing additional reports as more information comes in on the bentonite spill impacting Redwood Creek and the Southern Eel. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. A five-year plan for Eureka infrastructure includes some major projects, including a new bicycle boulevard and expansion of the city's trail network. Daniel Mintz reports.
Eureka is making significant progress on a range of capital improvement projects, and many more are charted in a freshly approved five-year plan. At its June 2nd meeting, the Eureka City Council was briefed on a wide variety of completed projects, those underway, and those in planning stages. Most of the projects are funded through state and federal grants, bond funding, and various city reserve funds. City engineer Jesse Willer described the completion of Dayas Park between Summer and California Streets as, quote, a big one, and, quote, a really wonderful addition to our community. Another major recreation project, the Grace Martin Memorial Park and Waterfront Trail, is underway at Halverson Park. The new park's playground will include a realigned waterfront trail, and a related project is the repaving of Halverson's Bay Trail from the Adorney Center to the Samoa Bridge area, described here by Willer.
This project has been bid and is going to start construction in the next couple weeks. This is a maintenance and rehabilitation of our existing Halverson Park Trail that has been damaged by tree roots and upheaval and other things along the way. So we'll have a much more modern Class 1 trail facility along that area, and one that will have proper plantings along the way so that it won't damage the trail in the future.
Willer also gave an update on a bigger trail project that's been long in planning stages, the Beta Zoo Trail.
I feel like we've been talking about Beta Zoo Trail for ever. Beta Zoo Trail, we are currently in the design phase and the right-of-way phase. So our right-of-way phase is clipping along. We're meeting with property owners and making offers and acquiring easements. So progress is being made for the trail alignment there. And design is at about 60% design. So we'll be pausing a minute on the design while we catch up with our right-of-way process.
The C Street Bicycle Boulevard project was completed this year through a $2.3 million state grant and runs from the foot of C Street to Harris Street. It's come under some criticism due to its vehicular traffic reconfigurations, but Councilmember Katie Moulton has heard, quote, a lot of feedback supporting it. Another grant-funded Bicycle Boulevard project on G Street between 7th and Harris Streets is in planning stages, and Willer said it will likely have a lesser impact on auto traffic.
This Bicycle Boulevard will probably be a lighter touch Bicycle Boulevard than C Street Bicycle Boulevard, which was, you know, very, there's diverters, traffic diverters, there was one ways, that sort of thing on C Street. This one will probably be a lighter touch Bicycle Boulevard that'll allow traffic to still go through there. So it won't be quite the lower level traffic stress at the C Street Bike Boulevard. I mean, it'll be a higher level of traffic stress, but there'll also be full movement of vehicles, but there will be some things there, hopefully to slow vehicles down and still allow there to be a safe environment for cyclists.
The only speaker during a public comment period, Colin Fisk of the Coalition for Responsible Transportation Priorities, vouched for a C Street-like approach to the G Street Boulevard project. He said for a bicycle boulevard to be effective, it should, quote, prevent through traffic in order to make it a comfortable and safe facility. Willer also presented a long list of recently completed projects, including street repavings, culvert replacements, sewer lateral replacements, and installation of a waterfront fuel tank. Projects that are set for construction include wastewater treatment plant outfall upgrades and the grant-funded West Side Flood Reduction and Sea Level Rise Mitigation Project. Moulton described the efforts as, quote, fantastic work that, quote, takes a lot of planning and a lot of skill and a lot of expertise. The 5-year capital improvement program was unanimously approved. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Southern Humboldt Fire Departments conducted their wildland readiness drill on Sunday, June 7th, KMUD News reports. On Sunday, June 7th, over 200 participants took part in the 2026 Southern Humboldt Multi-Agency Wildland Readiness Drill. The drill combined many agencies, including large numbers of local volunteer firefighters, including those from the 13 Southern Humboldt Fire Departments that form a newly created Joint Powers Alliance. Representatives from Reach Air Ambulance and CAL FIRE also participated. An important training exercise for local firefighters, the Southern Humboldt Multi-Agency Wildland Readiness Drill awards participants with the NWCG RT-130 Wildland Fire Safety Training Annual Refresher Certification and NWCG S-130 Field Exercise Credit, which are necessary for local agencies to work directly with organizations like CAL FIRE as professional firefighters. The event took place on a gorgeous, mild, and sunny Sunday at the Garberville Community Park. While it was closed to the public, members of the press and representatives from political offices were granted access. KMUD News interviewed representatives on site from a number of local fire departments and agencies to learn more about the event and its importance for this summer's fire season. We'll start with Bryceland Fire Chief Aurora Studebaker explaining the event and which agencies were participating.
Today we're here participating in the 2026 Wildland Readiness Drill, where volunteer firefighters and other agencies come together to prepare for the upcoming wildland fire season. There's over 26 different agencies represented here today, Southern Humboldt Fire Departments, as well as Cal Fire. We've got REACH here, Humboldt County Prescribed Burn Association, and many more.
Next, Braceland Fire Public Information Officer Camilo Stevenson spoke on the scale of the Southern Humboldt Multi-Agency Wildland Readiness Drill and how it compares to other RT-130 training events. The RT-130 is a yearly certification required as an annual refresher for professional firefighters.
As far as I know, this is the largest RT-130 training event in the United States for volunteer firefighters.
Events like the Southern Humboldt Multi-Agency Wildland Readiness Drill require a lot of planning. We spoke with Tanner Spees, chief of the Telegraph Ridge Fire Protection District, who was the section chief in charge of planning the multi-agency drill. Tanner explained the large amount of work that goes into planning such an expansive event across multiple local fire departments.
What goes into planning an event like this?
A lot. So we have a planning team that's all under planning section. And we start out early where we basically build a registration process. We start to build what we're calling the Incident Management Team 4. So that's kind of a story of its own. There right now currently exists in the professional fire response world. There's Incident Management Team 3, 2, and 1. But there isn't really a standard for Incident Management Team 4. So the bigger the number, the smaller the incident it's made to deal with. We came across this in Southern Humboldt because we are organizing these prescribed fires and events like this, where a smaller version of an incident management team makes tons of sense. Part of Diana Totten's vision of also preparing us locally in the case of a catastrophe or some large event, that if we don't have access to an IMT-3, if they're all over California. And so how will we pull together as a community? So there was the development of this idea of an Incident Management Team 4. So we use this structure, and it's built on the Incident Command System in order to organize this whole event. And it starts with Incident Commander, right, who is Aurora Studebaker and Deputy Incident Commander Kai Ostro today. The PIO, the Public Information Office, right, Camilo Stevenson. Our Safety Officer, Jim Fulton. Right, and then Liaison, which I'm currently also taking that role. Then you go into General Staff, and you go Operations, which is Nick Pape and Seth Ayers, and Planning Section Chief, myself and Chelsea Sproul as trainee, and then Logistics, Michael Carter, Greg Swaffer, and Finance, which is Chelsea Sproul as well. So that's Command and General Staff of an Incident Management Team. And so we build that team, and everybody has their parts to plan, right? So the Planning Section, we're in charge of getting all the people together, all the documentation, and making sure all the parts are in place. So we work with Operations, and we connect them with Logistics, and we get everybody on the same page, and it's all coming to the place where we can create this Incident Action Plan, an IAP, they call it. And we're getting to the point where we can assign everyone out their roles, right? So there's 214 people involved in this training today.
Telegraph Ridge Fire Protection District Chief Tanner Spees also spoke on why it's important for so many local fire departments to collaborate, including to build better local networks, camaraderie, and communication during the fire season.
We have firefighters from Palo Verde to Petrolia, right? Fruitland Ridge to Whale Gulch. These are large expanses, right? This is the area we call Southern Humboldt. And they're getting to work together shoulder to shoulder today in squads and crews. After you're in a squad or a crew together, you build a camaraderie. You know each other by name now. We do this also with prescribed fires, where we get together and we organize it with an incident management team, and we build these teams in order to do prescribed fire for fuel reduction or ecological restoration, different objectives, training objectives, and they get that same thing. And what that does is that makes us so that we know the whole Southern Humboldt fire community builds a camaraderie, a family feeling, a fire family feeling, they call it. And people get to know each other, feel proud of their own department, but also get to know that department that's, you know, maybe all the way across Southern Humboldt or maybe right next door.
Tanner Spees also elaborated on a new joint information system that KMUD will be participating in as part of our emergency response team efforts.
So as part of the incident management team 4 that we're building in Southern Humboldt, under Southern Humboldt Fire and Rescue, one of our goals is to build a joint information system, which would basically connect our public information office with our other media outlets. And so that in the case of a significant emergency situation, we would already have an emergency structure to work together to make sure that we're coming together and getting that information out.
Next are comments from Bert Bartlett, a CAL FIRE captain who spoke about the ongoing and important collaboration between CAL FIRE and our local volunteer fire departments in Southern Humboldt.
Bert Bartlett, fire captain, Neyland Hill Attack Base. And so we're happy to be here at this event. We spend a lot of time down in Southern Humboldt, and the volunteers out here are the first ones that show up on scene because it's such a remote area. So the opportunity to get to this site and be able to capture a lot of people and talk about our capabilities and how we can help them work together and make sure we're on the same page and just continue to build the relationships between the local departments is immensely helpful when we go fly on emergency situations. So we're here today to talk about our capabilities for firefighting and water dropping, communications, LZ selection, and then also how we can assist each other on air rescues and medevacs. We have CAL FIRE helicopter here from Neyland, and then we also have Reach 18 up here today, and we're able to discuss and collaborate and talk to each other and just build those relationships and foster those relationships so that we can continue to work well and make things efficient when it becomes an emergency situation.
The 2026 Southern Humboldt Multi-Agency Wildland Readiness Drill in many ways marks the start of our summer fire season in Humboldt County. Southern Humboldt once again has hundreds of certified professional volunteer firefighters ready to respond to a multitude of threats, including widespread wildfires. KMUD News is actively working on relaunching our emergency response team. In coordination with the new joint information system created by 13 local fire departments here in Southern Humboldt, we will continue to work tirelessly to bring you up-to-date and accurate emergency information throughout this summer season and beyond. While we hope major fire events do not occur, we can assure you that tuning into KMUD during fire events will be one of the quickest ways to get updated information. Our aim is to keep as many people safe as we can, and that would not be possible without the wonderful work of our local volunteer fire departments and CAL FIRE. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. Next, we have a story from Suzanne Potter on the well-being of California's children.
A new report finds that California ranks in the bottom third nationally for child well-being for the 15th year in a row. That's according to the 2026 Kids Count report out today from the Annie E. Casey Foundation. Experts tracking the information say cost of living is a key factor. Kelly Hardy with the nonprofit Children Now says when families struggle to keep a roof over their heads, everything else suffers.
41% of kids live in households with high housing costs, and that really impacts every aspect of a child's life because there's just less resources available for other parts of their well-being.
One bright spot is children's health. Almost all children in California have health insurance, largely because the state expanded Medi-Cal a few years back to cover undocumented children. But advocates worry that progress may be lost when the cuts to Medicaid passed by Congress last summer take full effect next year. Leslie Bossier with the Annie E. Casey Foundation says the solutions are there. Programs like SNAP, subsidies for housing and child care, and tax credits are proven to work.
In 2021, when Congress passed the expanded child tax credit, we saw a historic low rate of poverty for children. It declined to 5%. The next year, when those child tax credits expired, it spiked again, back up to 13%.
California also has very low scores for education, with large majorities not proficient in math, reading, and science at key grade levels. Hardy says the state needs to hire more professionals across the school system to support student success.
class sizes are a big problem, but we also have too few counselors, school nurses, administrators. Just overall, there's too few adults who are helping drive student learning.
For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Bianna Federico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. Also thanks to our reporter for this broadcast, Daniel Mintz. KMUD News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? Give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmod.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingtao, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.